You're listening to Stateside. I'm Zoe Clark, sitting in for April Baer. A year has passed since Governor Whitmer announced the first two cases of coronavirus in Michigan. Today, things are far from perfect when it comes to vaccine access and plans to return to any semblance of normalcy. But Michigan restaurants have reopened at 50% capacity, and many schools are back to at least some form of face-to-face learning for those families that are interested. Nursing homes are allowing in-person visitors, and contact sports have resumed. This could mean there's finally a light at the end of the tunnel. For some, that is refreshing. But for others, it's creating just as much stress and anxiety as the pandemic itself. Arash Javanbacht is director of the Stress, Trauma, and Anxiety Research Clinic at Wayne State's Department of Psychiatry. He recently spoke with Stateside host April Baer about what transitioning out of lockdown means for our mental and emotional health.
Arash, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
Last time, we talked about the stress of transitioning into social distancing and isolation because of COVID. But what do you hear now from folks at the clinic as they think about returning to larger gatherings, or I guess even smaller gatherings, or any such changes on the horizon?
So yeah, when it comes to stress, as we discussed the last time, there are some variables that affect the way we are stressed and actually make any experience more stressful. One is the uncertainty and unknown. One is the lack of control over what's happening, and one is transition. And we had all of these when we went into the COVID pandemic. We didn't know what's happening, how are things changing. We didn't know much about the illness and the ways of spreading. We didn't have much control over how changes are happening, and a ton of transitions happened. Basically, our way of living substantially changed over a very short period of time. From the way we work, from the way we socialize, from the way we interact, even the way we process a person's face. Now we just have the eyes as the social cues. And the amount of time we spend with our family versus our colleagues. And now we're transitioning back, we will basically go through a lot of those stressors, including like uncertainty. We don't know exactly when and how things will transition back. Most of us will not know. Right, don't know now when and at some point and to what extent and at what graded exposure we will go gradually back to work. We don't know when and how schools will open or go to full capacity. And then there's a ton of transition again happening to going back. And part of it is social skills, which is like any other skill. When we don't use them as much, then they may get rusty. I mean, may need to do a refresher. So I have people worried about all of these things. They don't know, let's say this is the simplest, one of the simple but complicated examples is that now kids are used to a different way of living. They're at home, and parents now, they don't use daycare, they don't use childcare, all the things. So they have basically adapted their life to a new style. Now, when things change, let's say I have to go back to work, will that match the time my kid is going back to school or not? And how much time we're spending with family, with our pets? All these things are stressful things for everybody. And of course, as you mentioned, a lot of people are looking forward to the positive changes, but it worries a lot of people. I mean, the good news is that different than the initial phase when we transitioned to a terrible situation very quickly, now we at least have a kind of a graded exposure and gradual transition, more gradual transition to the normal way of living.
You know, we've been asking people to share stories about how things have changed for them during the pandemic. And one of our listeners, Carrie Sweeney, wrote in about how even more than the pandemic itself, other people's behaviors are making her totally anxious. And she says, I have realized how selfish people are. I have also realized how dirty people are. I will never sing happy birthday over a candle and cake again. I will never shake a hand again. I will never hug some random person again. Don't touch me. I'm happy to be in isolation alone with my partner, as is he. I feel like her comment shows so much of how people have become hyper aware of, you know, health risks, but just how we care for each other. Do you ever hear comments like this coming from kids or from parents who you talk to?
I haven't specifically heard the exact words, but I have been exposed to people telling about the challenges they have had to go through because of how other people would want to socialize or not to socialize, or put pressure for meeting you or not meeting you, or the different ways that we are socializing. I totally understand that such a very painful and stressful and scary and depressing situations can really color our emotions and the way we feel. A lot of us are feeling down. We know after such experiences, we even know from the previous pandemics, there's high level of depression, high level of anxiety, and people are not feeling good, a lot of people. So, and I understand how that can affect the way we are feeling and the way we are thinking at the moment. But at the same time, I would say never say never. I mean, I'm sure that transition, this experience has affected the way a lot of things happen, and that a lot of those changes may stay permanent. I mean, a lot of us may not go back to the original traditional office work. And in terms of how people behave, well, we, in general, when there are situations of adversity and hardship and high level of stress, most of us or a lot of us will not be in our best behavior. We know it about ourselves. And when I'm angry, when I'm not happy, when I'm very terrified, it's hard for me to be my best self. So I understand people have had such interactions with others, but things might change. I mean, the good news here is that as a species, we have gone through a lot worse than this. Through hundreds of thousands of years, we have experienced a lot worse adversities. So, and we are a very resilient species. We have bounced back. And gradually, and the other thing is that there's no rush. So gradually, we might be able to slowly bounce back. And yeah, if I'm feeling now that I don't want to hang out with people or socialize, there's no push, there's no rush. We want to validate our feelings and understand it's a tough time.
Another listener, Christina Wyman, wrote in about her general pessimism that anything will change at all.
After we all get vaccinated, now we've had this entire year where people are not seeing each other. People are perhaps not keeping in touch as much, and they're just fatigued and tired of this whole thing, and they don't have the energy for relationships. Will that be the new normal? You know, I think Americans are very individualistic anyway as a society. So I wonder how much the pandemic maybe obliterated our bandwidth for anything extra.
What she's talking about of this feeling of exhaustion for having to regulate and maintain and think about relationships on a much more laborious level. Do you think that's going to change social interactions either over the short term or over the long term?
It's hard to tell. Now, the first thing is, as I mentioned, it's understandable. We have been beaten up this year. It has not even been only the pandemic itself. It has been what it brings to us in terms of, I don't know, even difficulties with financial situation, difficulties with relating to others, losing some of our social skills. I noticed it myself. I go to a place and I start a conversation with the, let's say, cashier. It's a little bit difficult for me now compared to when we started. So it is understandable that we are feeling this way. And will some of the forms of life will be transitioned and some of these changes stay? It is very highly likely and possible. I mean, pandemic not only has changed some of our ways of living, might have expedited some of the changes which were already coming. I mean, unfortunately, we are in this age of social media that a lot of our interactions and social life has become something very virtual and very artificial. But those are not the things we want. We know from the past that when we have come out of such very depressing experiences, let's say war, let's say other pandemics, yes, there have been long-lasting effects, but we have been able to bounce back. So no reason and no, we don't have to push for it. I don't have to push for starting immediately to, like, I don't know, when everybody's vaccinated and everything is safe to start to interact with everybody. But gradually, we will be able to, that's what I believe, we will be able to go because we have gained those skills. Let's say if I'm, I don't know, whether if I'm 10 or 50, I have had 9 or 49 years of experience with this normal social life. Now, the 1 year, chances are, and it comes to when we talk about trauma, we talk about the, what was I before. If I was before this, had a so solid social life, I am very hopeful we will be able to go back. I'm more worried about the kids, because a lot of kids have lost 1 year of the ability to learn and enhance and advance social skills. So it might be harder for some of the kids to go back to that or even start learning social interactions and skills when they go back to school. But at the same time, the good news about the kids is that they have a more plastic brain than us and they can learn faster. So I don't want to give a two-sided answer, but I think it's a complicated issue. That's why I'm looking at different aspects of it. And in general, I'm hopeful with a gradual transition.
Arash, what kinds of things can adults do to help kids with this transition?
I think it's one of the very important ways. Like, just imagine flashing back to the time we were kids. We most of the times, because we didn't have a very well-developed cognitive brain and a very well understanding of the world, we would look at our parents to see how dangerous, how safe, how kind, how fine, how difficult the world is to us. And a lot of us still carry that with us. If my father was always worried about everything, I've learned that the world is a scary and unsafe environment. So I think what can be done for the kids, which I think is important, is... I know it's not very easy, though, is for us to keep it together ourselves with them, for us to know the signs. As I said, unknown is bad. It is scary, it's stressful, dangerous. Know what are the safe, what is safe, what is not safe. And I understand this trend. This is constantly changing. But knowing that fact gives us some certainty that will affect the way our kids pursue it. Also, working on the social interactions and skills with the kids, I think, is going to help. If the kids cannot get it from outside interactions within the family, do the plays, do the interactions with the kids, even encourage, if in person is not possible, virtual social interactions beyond the social media, people talking to each other, picking up the phone and calling. So encouraging the kids to have and slowly and gradually develop on those skills. We always, when it comes to exposure, we talk about gradual exposure. If someone is afraid of, let's say, a spider, I don't drop a tarantula on their face to help them with their fear. I gradually show them a picture of a spider, next time I show them a video of a spider, next time I show them a spider, I don't know, 10 meters away from them, and gradually do the exposure. Same applies for the kids, for ourselves. So in graded and gradual steps, I'm hopeful it's doable.
Have you run into some kids who are really freaked out at the thought of going back to school?
Of course, all the time. It's not even just the pandemic. Even I can remember myself, if as a kid I was for any reason out of school for a week, or even during the summertime when we were away from the school, when we wanted to go back, it would be a little bit hard. Like any other thing that you want to go back. You haven't been working out for a while. You want to go back to working out. Because we lose some of the skills, and number one, the things that the challenges look more scary. We always say the anticipation of a challenge most times looks more scary than the challenge itself when you're in it. And people, I'm sure most people can relate to that. There have been times that we were worried about something a lot, and when we went to it, it was not as scary as we thought. Same for the kids. When they have been away from something, including school, for a long time, it will be hard. Yeah, I've heard it from kids and I've heard it from college students. Some are excited, some are very excited, some are less excited, some are scared. That's why it's important to, as much as we can, reduce the length of lack of exposure.
Let's go back to something that another listener wrote into us about. This comment comes from Siobhan O'Lara in Detroit, who talked about her anxieties with returning to civilization, so to speak.
In terms of going back to complete normal or going out to more restaurants and expanding my circle to what it was before COVID, I think that's going to be quite a while for me. I at the beginning of this, I became extremely anxious because of how COVID is spread and wanting to be safe. And I think I have to think about how to slowly recondition myself to these new normals and to a place where I feel safe and that I am protecting the safety of others.
I was thinking about what you just said, Arash, about acclimating kids and probably adults too. You know, the return doesn't, in some cases, the return doesn't have to be all at once. Does anything else come to mind in what Siobhan had to say?
Yeah, that's very true. I totally agree. We don't have to rush it. If I'm feeling down, if I've a lot of other things to deal with and struggle with and figure out before I go to a restaurant, there's no reason to say, oh, I have to force myself just because I should go to a restaurant or I should go to a social gathering. If I don't feel it, it's okay. But if I don't feel it because I'm really depressed, then it's good and important to get help. Because at the end of the day, you just live once, and we want to live this one time to the fullest. But there's no push, no pressure. One thing I don't want people to do is to avoid things out of fear. Because not doing things out of fear is kind of restraining us. I believe in people's freedom. I think freedom of choice is one of the most important things for humans. And if fear is limiting that freedom, I'm against it. So if I want to go, but fear is blocking me, we got to do it. We got to, as we discussed, gradually, slowly, go just to the, go to a shopping place go to a grocery store at 10 p.m. where there aren't many people. And gradually you can up it as the fear responds to exposure, because fear really does respond. If we avoid, every time I avoid it, basically my brain is telling me, it's scary, you avoid it, I avoid, nothing bad happens. Brain says, you see, I told you, you gotta stay away from it. But when you expose, you get terrified, nothing bad happens, next time nothing bad, and gradually the brain learns. And in that, knowing the facts from the science, from scientific sources, not from, this and that social media group, will allow us to feel more comfortable, because that knowledge is something very important in humans, in the ways we limit and control our fear.
Arash Javanbakht has been my guest today. He's director of the Stress, Trauma, and Anxiety Research Clinic in Wayne State's Department of Psychiatry. Arash, a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for the good advice.
Thank you so much for having me.